Okay, tonight is Wednesday, October 13th, or Vav Cheshvan. This is the women's Mishnah Shir covering Masechet Beitza.
Okay, Rabotai. Okay. After a voluminous number of the emails, 2,000 emails, quite a number of people said, okay, we did Shabbos already, I remember doing Shabbos already. So some people said they'd like to do Shabbos, but there were quite a number of people who said we did it already. And amongst this, the suggestions that were offered, Beitza was the clear winner. So we're going to do Masechet Beitza. It's related to Shabbos in many respects, because there was a nickname for Masechet Beitza, it was called Masechet Yom Tov. And in fact, it's somewhat difficult to understand how Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi decided to edit and include many halachot which are applicable on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and he presented them only in Masechet Beitza and not in Masechet Shabbat. So there will be a lot of overlap. So for those of you who want the Shabbos, you'll get some of that too. But truth be told, it really makes no difference what we're learning. As long as we're learning, that's the only thing. I want to dedicate this year to the memory of Yaakov Eliyahu ben Avraham Natan, that's Adina Kirshner, our executive secretary, is her brother-in-law, whose yard site is tonight. So we're dedicating this year with Ilui Nishmato. Okay. As I told you last week, Mishnah rarely presents rules and regulations and principles. The details, the principles, are communicated to us by presenting concrete cases. And we now have to, sometimes the Gemara itself, tries to understand what is the underlying principle that might be included, or the basis of the rule that is presented in the Mishnah itself. We're going to see a Mishnah tonight, the first Mishnah, actually, which will present three debates between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. The three of them have nothing to do with one another, and they are listed here only because they are most unusual, in that Shammai, at least the way the Mishnah records their position, takes the strict position, and Shammai takes the lenient position, and Hillel takes the strict position. Typically, in the hundreds of machlokot between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, typically Hillel was the mekil, was generally lenient. Shammai typically was machmir. Here, the Mishnah notes that Shammai is going to be the lenient one concerning a topic which is the opening topic of Masechet Beitza, but because there were two other cases which reminded the editor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, that this pattern existed by those two other cases, that's why he decided to learn it, to code it together, because free association was one of the methods how they remembered certain things and orally transmitted them. So once they came to the conclusion, I'm going to open up this Masechet with the law which we're going to study tonight, then he reminds us, oh, there are two other cases where this phenomenon exists, where Shammai is the lenient one and Hillel is the machmir, and therefore we place all three of those cases together.
You're saying there are literally only three cases?
That is correct. Every other time, Shammai, wherever you can see a debate where something, where someone is more stringent than less stringent, it's always Shammai who is more stringent and Hillel who is less. Sometimes the debate doesn't involve stringencies or leniencies, but wherever it does, you know that Shammai takes the stringent position and Hillel takes the lenient position. There is something floating around in the Beit Midrash air. It's part of the air pollution of the Beit Midrash, which says that we have now established the rule in accordance with Hillel, and when the Mashiach comes, we're going to switch and revert to Shammai's opinion. That's floating around in the Beis Medrash, every single Beis Medrash, even though there is no such statement anywhere in the Talmud, not Bavli, Yerushalmi, Tosefta, no place. But it's floating around someplace in the air pollution that that is the case. And it's simply not true, because we didn't arbitrarily decide that the halacha is going to be like Hillel. It was simply done by vote. And they were outvoted all the time. That's all. That's the reason. Had Hillel been the more machmir person, the din would have followed Hillel as well, based on the fact that a vote was taken, and Talmidei Beit Hillel outnumbered on a more regular basis the Talmidim of Beit Shammai, and that's why the halacha was established in accordance with Hillel and not Shammai. We're not talking Hillel. Mr. Hillel and Mr. Shammai themselves only argued about three cases in all of the Talmud. Only three cases. The rest are the students of Hillel and Shammai. If you look at a Mishnah in Masechet Chagigah, there is a Mishnah that tells us that for the first six generations of the Tannaitic era, six different generations, there was only one debate. Only one debate. For six consecutive generations. Then, after, and Hillel and Shammai are the sixth pair, it's the Zugot that we have in Pirkei Avot. You know, in the first Pirkei Avot, so you have these pairs. Those pairs are the first six generations of Tanaim. According to the Mishnah in Chagigah, they only argued one thing. One thing. Happened to be a Hilchos Yontif case. Six generations they argued about. And Hillel and Shammai are one of those two. And then, when the Gemara says, when Talmidei Hillel and Shammai broke out, when those two schools emerged, Nitraber ha-machloket b'Yisrael. Then all the machloket broke out, and a good part of it was attributed to the massacre at Beitar. During the kill that they in Beitar, which was eliminated in the early part of the second century, about 50, 60 years after the Churban Bayit Sheni, it was probably, at least number-wise, the second greatest tragedy in the history of Am Yisrael. It's been estimated that between 1 million and 1.5 million Jews were slaughtered in Beitar. And quite a number of Talmidei Chachamim. So much of the Torah Sheba'al Peh was lost, and that's why the Talmidim of Hillel and Shammai had to re-debate what is our tradition. Because up until that time, there was a discussion of the Beis Medrash. They took a vote, and that was it. Whatever the vote was, the majority, that was circulated. The halacha is A. Not halacha A and B. The halacha is A. That's it. End of discussion. But? No, not earlier on. No. Before the time of the Tanaim. There may have been discussions and debates, but they came to a resolution in the whatever forum they came to, and that was it. Folks, there's only one opinion. This is the opinion. Then, when the traditions of Torah Sheba'al Peh were lost because of Haruge Beitar, people started asking, what exactly is the correct halacha? So this guy said, no, this is the halacha. This guy said, that's the halacha. And that's how it all started. So let's look at our opening line of the Mishnah, which talks about an egg that is laid on Yom Tov. Beitzah Shenolda B'Yom Tov. Beit Shammai Omrim Te'achel, Ubeit Hillel Omrim Lo Te'achel. Beit Shammai says, you may eat this egg. And Beit Hillel says, you may not eat this egg. Okay. As usual, the Mishnah doesn't tell us why yes and why not. Anybody want to speculate? Why would Hillel say, you're not allowed to eat an egg that is laid on Yom Tov? Why not? What? See, so you claim it's no love. Good? Okay. That's going to be the first of four explanations which the Gemara is going to offer. We're going to see it tonight. First explanation is that the first Mishnah in Masechet Beitzah is going to handle one of the most essential elements of understanding Shabbat and Yom Tov, the concept of Muktzah. And I have nothing, and I don't mean moving a pen. I mean Muktzah as it relates to food. Muktzah as it relates to food. Yes. So now you're operating with the premise that everything you eat for Yom Tov has to be prepared Erev Yom Tov.
Or it has to be planned for.
For Yom Tov. I'm not talking about Shabbos. Are you allowed to cook on Yom Tov?
Are
you allowed to bake? Not that it's not necessary, you have no use for it. Why don't you have a use for an egg? You want to eat egg salad.
Because you have food already, that's been prepared.
I have no food. So there is going to be, muktzah is going to be an issue. That's going to be the first explanation. We'll see it in a second, yeah. I didn't create it. God did. I didn't create anything. Yeah. Gathering is only when it comes to... It's only when you're dealing with something that grows from the ground. Harvesting.
So gathering eggs?
No. Gathering's not eggs. It's not considered a harvesting act.
Because you're killing
premature growth. Okay. No. Not killing. Okay. It's good suggestions. So far, we have one. One, and that's going to be the most logical one. Then there are going to be three others that are two incredibly far-fetched, and one which you... we'll see. We're going to learn all four of them. All four of them. So before we see the next two other machloket, let's get to the core of this issue. Let's get to the core of this issue. So the Gemara will tell us, please go to the flip side of the page for a minute. And I bracketed all of the relevant lines which are going to be necessary for our discussion. Omar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman is the Amoraic sage that presents explanation number one why Shammai says you're allowed to eat it and why Hillel says you're not allowed to eat it. Le'olam. The case is talking about Tarnigolet Ha'omedet L'gadel Beitzim. The chicken that gave birth to this egg, that laid this egg, you have to understand what was your intention with that chicken on Erev Yom Tov. So previously, I didn't start at the beginning of the Gemara entertained the following possibility. That I planned on eating that chicken on Yom Tov. I went over to my cage and I said, little white chicken over here, I'm devouring you on Yom Tov. Okay. Next morning, the chicken, before I had a chance to shech him, is laid an egg. The Gemara now claims that according to everybody, you would be permitted to eat the egg. According to everybody, you would be permitted to eat the egg. Tell me why. Tell me why you're allowed to eat the egg under those circumstances where I designated chicken to be eaten. Exactly. Because the egg was part of the chicken. So just as, when you designate a fruit to be eaten, you're allowed to eat the inside of the fruit, so too, when you designate a chicken, you designate the entire chicken. The egg is part of the chicken. You're allowed to eat it as well. And therefore, there is no debate whatsoever. That's what the Gemara said 5 lines earlier. Yeah?
So if you pick chicken A to eat the chicken B and baby, you can't eat the egg.
We are not discussing that as yet. You cannot eat the egg.
You can't eat chicken B.
That's correct.
You cannot designate that chicken.
Correct. In fact, according to what I'm saying, you can't eat chicken bee either. Not only can't you eat the egg, you can't eat the chicken. It hasn't been designated. Let's see. That's what the Gemara is going to talk about. Hold on a second. So Rav Nachman is now going to tell premise number one. Le'olam b'tarnegolet ha'omeret l'gadel beitzin. This chicken has been spared my knife, and I told him, you got nothing to worry about, little chicky, because I want you around to produce eggs. I don't plan on slaughtering you this Yom Tov. No, but some chickens I have a right to eat. So in order for me to determine which chicken I am going to eat on Yom Tov, we're operating with the notion I have to designate it. This chicky is to be eaten. This one is going to be saved for raising eggs. Since I designated it for eggs, therefore, the chicken is mukta. Why is the chicken mukta? Tell me why. Because it has not been set aside for what? For eating. It's been set aside for something else. I have made a statement or a declaration, doesn't have to be oral, it can be a mental thought, that I don't plan on eating that chicken on Yom Tov. And you believe that the concept of mukta can apply to foods for Shabbos and Yom Tov. The concept of food, of mukta, can apply. What does that mean? And here I'm going to explain the critical idea. The debate is going to center around, do you require active participation to determine what you're going to eat? Do you have to mentally prepare everything that you're going to eat on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Or do we say, alternative B, that as long as it's edible, it's automatically prepared for Shabbos and Yom Tov. As long as it's edible, it need not have to have my preparation. It can be prepared by itself, as long as it's edible. So on Yom Tov, there are no restrictions, because a cow is edible on Yom Tov. Why? Because what are you allowed to do on Yom Tov? You're allowed to slaughter it. A cow on Shabbos is mukta. But when you're dealing with an apple, that apple can be mukta on Shabbos and mukta on Yom Tov as well. And I'm going to give you, I know we mentioned this one, the classic illustration. Classic illustration. Kamri de'iski. The dates in your fruit store. Here is the case. We all grew up in Borough Park, right? We all grew up in Borough Park. And you used to have people walking downstairs, Hochbergs on 52nd and 13th Avenue. Remember them? 52nd and 13th. They lived upstairs, and the store was downstairs. For 50 years, Hochbergs, Suri Kamenetsky's parents. 50 years, Hochberg. So now, whatever was in the store, obviously, it was a grocery store, they didn't plan on using that for Yontif. Why? That was the store. The store was closed on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Suddenly 50 people come over on Shabbos, and Mrs. Kamenetsky is, Mrs. Hochberg rather, has no cookies left in the house. So she should have said, to go downstairs and get, I have 50 boxes of cookies downstairs. I'm going to bring them up to eat for snacks. Says Rabbi Yehuda, she's not allowed to eat any of them. Since these cookies have been set aside for commercial enterprise, they are mukta, and may not be eaten on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Says Rabbi Shimon, if it's edible, it prepares itself. Is a cookie edible? Of course. Therefore, it prepares itself for Shabbos consumption, and need not have you, the owner, person, prepare it. So according to Rabbi Shimon, you're allowed to go downstairs to the grocery store and get the cookies. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, you were sent ahead of time. I may need to get it.
That's something else. Correct. then I designated it. Then I prepared those cookies.
Even but in the,
that's correct. As long as I theoretically prepared. So now we know that there is a possibility of the word mukta being applied to an apple. That's what's going to happen here. There is the possibility of a chicken being mukta. Why is this chicken being mukta? Because just as you just acknowledged to me that the cookies are mukta because they've been set aside for what reason? Commercial enterprise. This chicken is mukta because I'm saving it to do what? I'm saving it to produce eggs.
The cow would also be mukta because you could be setting aside the dairy cow to give milk.
To what?
Slaughter it. Like if you have cows that are dairy cows, you can't slaughter.
Correct. Correct. So if you set that aside, according to this theory, yes. Same thing.
If you set aside that chicken for the egg that is laid, I can use on
milk. Okay. So now we'll hold on 1 second. Hold on a second. So now let's read the Gemara. Le'olam b'tarnegolet ta'omedet l'gadol beitzen. U'de'itzle'i mukta itle'i nolad. If you are of the opinion that it's possible to create and designate mukta for a food for the chicken, then the egg is also going to be mukta because it's called nolad. How could you have prepared something yesterday that didn't exist? You can't designate something for use until it comes into existence. Hold on 1 second. Udelesle mukta letle nolad. And according to the opinion who says that the concept of mukta cannot apply to a food. Why can the concept of mukta not apply to a food? Because an edible is making itself. An edible is prepared by virtue of the fact that it can be consumed. That person also believes, even if the edible has not been in existence on Erev Yom Tov, when did this edible come into existence? On Yom Tov? It's making itself? Need not have your preparation, your hachana, and therefore it's permissible. So the names of the two people are, don't ever forget this, the person who recognizes mukta as an issue is Rabbi Yehuda. The person who claims that mukta is never a problem when it comes to edible is Rabbi Shimon. Beit Shammai to Rabbi Shimon, Ubeit Hillel to Rabbi Yehuda. Obviously, that's how the machloket lines up. Beit Shammai agrees with Rabbi Shimon that every food item is mechin itself. Consequently, this egg that was laid on Yom Tov morning was mechin itself. Go ahead and eat it. And Beit Hillel agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, you have to be making every article of food that you're planning on eating. If it wasn't in existence yet, you could not have prepared it. Therefore, by virtue of the fact that it was laid on Yom Tov, it's mukta and is usur to be eaten. And this isur mukta, according to Rabbi Yehuda, might even be d'oraita. It may not only be midrabanan. This isur of mukta might the de'oraita. What pasuk will he quote? The Gemara will quote it later. I'll just tell you now. It is found not by Yom Tov but by Shabbos, because the laws of mukta will apply by food to Shabbos and Yom Tov in Parshat B'Shalach, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for us the man. He did it in dramatic fashion. Because when you want to communicate something in an enormous significance, do it by show and tell. Not talk about it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to illustrate the prohibition of doing malach on Shabbos. How do we do that? 6 days a week, the man is going to come. You can carry it into your house. Shabbos, it's not going to be there. So how are you going to have any food for Shabbos? Says the Chumash, Vehechinu Eit Asher Yavi. You will prepare on Friday that which you're going to eat on Shabbos. Eit Asher Tofu, Eifu, whatever you plan on baking, you better do that on Friday. Eit Asher Tivashlu, Bashelu, whatever you plan on cooking, you better cook on Friday. So the Pasuk is saying, I have to be making my food on Friday for what? For Shabbos. Now the text technically means you don't have to have it in mind that I'm eating this apple and that thing. What do you have to prepare? Not to do the malacha on Shabbos. That's what the text really means. I have to have in mind, I have to do the physical preparation because otherwise I've been eating rice, wheels, and cottage cheese on Shabbos because I'm not allowed to cook. I'm not allowed to bake. But Rabbi Yehuda extends this and says, preparation is not only the preparation of the malacha, but preparation in your mind. This apple I want to eat, this I want to eat this, I want to eat this, I want this. And if something is down in the store, or something is in the chicken and has not yet been developed, it can't be prepared. And consequently, it will be mukzah. It will be mukzah. There is a case where Rabbi Shimon admits to his friend Rabbi Yehuda. How did they used to take... how did they get dried fruit at that time? How did they dry fruit? On the roof. Precisely. They took it up their roof and put it flat, their loaves, right? And they put it on the roof. Tons of grapes to make raisins and dates, dried dates, all this. Rabbi Shimon says, if on Shabbos afternoon I'm in the mood for a couple of dates, you're not allowed to go upstairs to the roof and take them down. Why? Because what you showed us that you're not planning on eating these things. It's not just that you didn't prepare them. You actively did something to show they are not yet ready for consumption. Because if they were ready for consumption, they wouldn't be on the roof. You put them on the roof. So even Rabbi Shimon acknowledges that under those circumstances, the fruit on the roof remained mukzah. Correct. But in the absence of doing something, Rabbi Shimon says it's automatically mukhan. Therefore, explanation number one is, Shammai agrees with Rabbi Shimon that the concept of mukzah does not apply to food, it's what making itself. Rabbi Hillel agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, who says, no, man must be making the food that they're planning to eat Shabbat and Yom Tov. Yes.
So if the difference between Shabbat and Yom Tov is that on Yom Tov, you can technically prepare food that was already designated by you.
Correct.
So both intention is key.
Correct. In terms of the intention, there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Correct. Even though we're going to see in a couple of lines that we may have to split our decision. The din will be Shabbos one thing, Yom Tov something else. We will see. What? Of course this will hold today. I will give you a perfect illustration. I'll give you a perfect illustration today. You have a freezer in your garage or your basement with you store things long term. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not allowed to take anything out of it on Shabbos.
Or
on Yom Tov. Unless you thought Erev Yom Tov, you know what? I might be running a little short of what's upstairs in the refrigerator in the kitchen, and I might have to go downstairs.
Would you have to think it?
Yes. Every single Friday. Every single Friday. Another chore to add to your list. Think about, what will I be needing for Shabbos? That would be a case in modern day times where there is a debate between Shammai and Hillel. What? I don't know exactly. But you have to know that I'm going down to the basement because even though it's the law, I have to think. Friday afternoon, there are things in the freezer downstairs that I need, and I have in mind that I'm planning to use them. Then you are making them. But in the absence, if you forgot about that, the food in the freezer downstairs remains completely mukta.
So theoretically, if you have company coming and need an extra sorbet, that happens to be your UCL.
And you didn't think about it, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could not take it. What do you mean? One second. Like I said, did we get to the halacha yet?
No.
No. Okay. Fine. The halacha is going to shock you. Shock you.
But it's not a regular business. It's an ancillary refrigerator in your shop. If you're young, you often take things from, but you don't have to immediately. You don't have to especially just take it. It's something you do on a regular basis in your shop.
If you have an ant, which you normal, I'm talking about a normal thing. Normal, the freezer downstairs, you don't go to it every single day. You go to that when you run short.
But your shop, your density, you often use it.
No. No, that's the difference. It's not determined what you do Shabbos and Yontif. It's determined how you treat it Sunday through Friday. If on Sunday through Friday, I need a Tuesday night, every Tuesday, every night, I'm going down to the freezer downstairs. You don't do that. But if you normally, okay, if you do, then that's not the case. We're talking about normal people. Normal people don't run down to the freezer every single day of the week. You don't. That's what's done for long term. And you buy something on sale, so you got 20 packages in there, and they'll be there. You get two of them in the freezer upstairs. That's the way most of us operate. So according to Rabbi Huda, you can't touch the stuff in the freezer. According to Rabbi Shimon, we can. For Shabbos and for Yom Tov, but thus far. Let's continue. Ask the Gemara. Now, who was the Amoraic sage who proposed the solution? What was his name? Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara is going to challenge this from something else that Rav Nachman said. This happens very frequently. Ask the Gemara. Umi Omar Rav Nachman. Achi! Did Rav Nachman say what you're claiming he did say? And Shammai agrees with Rabbi Shimon. And Hillel agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. For Hatnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Beit Shammai Omrin, Matbihin Me'al HaShulchan, Atzamot Uklipin. Case is talking about as follows. You have food on the table, and now all you have is lots of shells and bones. Chicken bones, and shells from peanuts. Okay? Are you allowed to clean it off the table or not? So now, no. See, tell me yes or no and why. Correct. Hold on, one second. You're introducing something else that it doesn't belong here yet. I asked you, can you move it or not? The answer is correct, you can't move it. Because I have no use for it. One second. Let's analyze this properly. The definition of classic mukta is, I have no use for it on Shabbos. Anything for which you have no use for on Shabbos, by definition, is mukta and cannot be moved. By definition, cannot be moved.
The button that falls off your shirt?
Exactly. I have no use for a button that falls off your shirt because you can't sew it back on Shabbos. So it's mukta. Anything for which you have no use. There are rocks in the street. They're mukta. Why is a rock mukta? I have no use for it. What can I do with a rock on Shabbos? What can I do with pieces of wood? You can't do anything with it. So therefore it's mukta. But nonetheless, listen carefully. Shammai said, Magbihin me'al ha'shulchan atzamotu klipin. Shammai says what? You're allowed to pick up the bones and the scraps and take it off this table? Presumably, there might be maybe something a little edible left on that. Presumably. Right? You know, maybe you didn't remove all of the meat, whatever it is. But Shammai says you can move it directly. Ubeit Hillel Omrim, no. Misalek et hatabla kula umina ara. What do you have to do? You can't pick up the bones and the shells. You have to pick the table up and let them slide into the garbage can. Try that with your dining table. You have to pick up your table and let all of the scraps,
not the tablecloth,
pick up the table. It might be the tablecloth too. As long as you don't handle the food directly, the bones directly, pick it up and let it slide into the can. No. This is what he has said you have to do. Plate is hold as if you're holding the food itself. Definitely no good. Now listen, that was a brighter. Listen to Rav Nachman's remark. So Amar Rav Nachman, ain lanu ela Beit Shammai to Rav Yehuda, u Beit Hillel to Rav Shimon. Rav Nachman says, switch the names around of who said what. Shammai is the one who said you have to pick up the table. Hillel is the one who said, what can you do? Pick them up directly. That's what Rav Nachman said. Switch the names around. Ein lanu, our tradition has it, no. Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda, in which he says that there is an Isur of Muktzah, and Hillel says like Rabbi Shimon, no problem of Muktzah with food, even with bones. That's the tradition that he had. It's so easy, don't forget, nothing's written down. So you say, oh, he said, no, I heard differently from my Rebbe. My Rebbe told me, Shammai said this, and Hillel said that. Therefore asks the Gemara, how is it possible that Rav Nachman will explain our Mishnah by claiming that Shammai holds like whom? Like Rav Yehuda. If Rav Nachman himself went out of his way in another braita to make sure that it was Shammai who holds like Rav Yehuda, not Hillel. According to our explanation, Shammai holds like Shimon, and therefore the egg is permissible. Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore the egg is prohibited. But in that case, asks the Gemara, Rav Nachman himself switched around the names of the people who offered their opinions to align Shammai with Rabbi Yehuda and Hillel with Rabbi Shimon. If Hillel is Rabbi Shimon and Shammai is Rabbi Yehuda, why would Shammai in our Mishnah say you're allowed to eat the egg? Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that muktzah is always an issue. So how could you, Rav Nachman, tell me that the reason why you're allowed to eat the egg according to Shammai, because he holds like Rabbi Shimon, when you, Rav Nachman, went out of your way to tell us that Shammai does not agree with Rabbi Shimon, Shammai agrees with Rabbi Yehuda? Listen, now the Gemara is going to resolve it. Listen to this. The Gemara is going to say that there is a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. This case of the scraps on the table happens to be in a Mishnah in Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara is now going to propose that on Yom Tov, Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon. And on Shabbos, Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So now Hillel is going to be the reverse. Let's listen carefully. On Yom Tov, Hillel says the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, are you allowed to eat the egg or not? No. And on Shabbos, the halacha is like, like Rabbi Shimon. Hillel will say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, and therefore you can move the scraps up, or an egg that's laid on Shabbos, you can eat it on Shabbos. That's what he's saying. An egg that's laid on Shabbos, we paskin like Rabbi Shammai will hold like Rabbi Huda. And Hillel will hold like Rabbi Shimon. That's the Gemara's question. It's going to be shocked. I told you it's going to be shocking. And Karo's going to call the law, just like the Gemara's going to answer. We're going to be less strict on Shabbos than we will on Yom Tov. We'll see why in a second. I know. Let's see what the Gemara says. Listen carefully. Amar lecha Rav Nachman. Four lines from the bottom. Gabi Shabbos. Let me tell you what's going to happen first. There is going to be a case in Hilcha Shabbos, in Maseka Shabbos, a case where the editor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, will only quote Rabbi Shimon's opinion. There will be a case in Maseka Shabbos where the editor of the Mishnah, for some reason, didn't quote the conflicting opinion. He only quotes Rabbi Shimon. There is a case in Maseches Beitza about Yom Tov where the editor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, only quotes Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and not Rabbi Shimon's opinion. So what will Rav Nachman extract from that unusual situation? Normally we would expect the editor of the Mishnah, every single time that there is a case that touches upon the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, in all fairness, what should he do? Every time, quote both. Quote both opinions. But Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the editor, does not do that. In some cases, in Hilcha Shabbos, he only quotes Rabbi Shimon's opinion. In some cases of Yom Tov, he only quotes Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Therefore, what conclusion is Rav Nachman going to say? Since Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the editor, only quoted Rabbi Shimon's opinion in the case of Shabbos, I think that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi believed that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos. That's why he didn't even pay respect to Rabbi Yehuda for quoting it. And I, Rav Nachman, say that since Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi by Yom Tov did not quote Rabbi Shimon's opinion, he only quoted Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, I think that he's giving us a message. Why did I not quote Rabbi Shimon's opinion on Yom Tov? Because the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore I, Rav Nachman, I'm going to say the same thing. Let's see the cases where that happens. Amar lecha Rav Nachman. Gabi Shabbos, in relationship to Hilcha Shabbos, disosam lan tana ki Rabbi Shimon. Sosam, stam. What is a Stam Mishnah, Rabotai? A Stam Mishnah. Nameless, unattributed. There are no names. So what do you walk away with if there is a Mishnah and no names and nobody's dissenting? What opinion? Everybody agrees. But we know it's not true. So why didn't the editor tell us, as he usually does, who dissented? Let's read the case. Bisnan, the Mishnah says, this is a Mishnah in Shabbos. Mechatzin es hadeluin lefnei habehema. That's not the critical case. Literally, it means you're allowed to cut up gourd for an animal to eat that on Shabbos. Forget about that. Ve'et hanivela lefnei haklavi. Listen to this. I had my cow kicking away a whole Shabbos. A healthy ox. Why do I have my ox alive? What's running through my mind? What I plan on doing with this ox? If it's alive, what happens? I plan to use it for work, or what else? to have kids, to produce milk. But I certainly don't have any intentions of giving it to Fluffy, the dog. I have no intention of giving my animal, which is alive, to Fluffy, the dog. Suddenly, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the cow dies. What status does the cow have? An animal that dies without a kosher shechita. It's called nevela. That is nevela. An animal that dies without a kosher shechita. We're not allowed to eat the nevela meat. It's never going to have any more kids. It's not going to be doing any more work for you. It's not going to produce any more milk. The only thing that I have available with it is to give it to Fluffy. Says Rabbi Shimon, says the Mishnah, you're allowed to cut up the cow and give it to Fluffy. Mechatchin es hanevela lefnei haklavin. I can cut up a cow that died on Shabbos and give it to Fluffy. Now what would you have expected the Mishnah to say? Oh, Rabbi Yehuda says no. And Rabbi Yehuda does say no. Why does Rabbi Yehuda say you cannot give that meat, which is now nevela, to Fluffy? Why? You know the answer, Rabotai. Because you didn't prepare it. Not only do you have to prepare your food for Shabbos, you got to prepare the food for your dumb mutt too. That's correct. You got to prepare the food for that too. And if you don't prepare it, let him go hungry. Who cares? I didn't prepare this cow for that dog. Why? He was alive. So I'm not feeding him a live dog. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you do, mentally prepare. You're eating this bag of Alpo. But if you have 20 bags of Alpo in the garage, according to Rabbi Yehuda, no. You can't feed him the bag of Alpo in the garage. You cannot, because that wasn't prepared for Shabbos. Now this Mishnah, as you see, this is the entire Mishnah. Mechatrin es hanevel of ne'achlovin. So we already know, who's the author of that opinion? Who says that that opinion is legitimate? Only Rabbi Shimon. So Rav Nachman asked, why didn't Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi engage in intellectual honesty and tell me that somebody says you know how to eat it? Says Rav Nachman, because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wants to communicate to me that I, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, believe that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos. How did he communicate that? In this particular case, I didn't even bother quoting Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Therefore, I, Rav Nachman, will now say that when it comes to Shabbos, the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. And if the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, when it comes to the shooting the bones, pick up the table? No, just pick it up again. That's it. That's all finished. No problem. Because the bones are worth something. What can you give the bones to? To Fluffy. I have no use for it. I can give to Fluffy. Now we're going to see a case by Yom Tov where Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi didn't bother quoting Rabbi Shimon's pig. Turn the page. Next page. Next page. Top of the page. Gabe Yom Tov Sosam Lantanak Rabbi Yehuda. In a case which dealt with Hilchos Yom Tov, the Tana, the editor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, only quotes Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. What's the case? A Mivakin Eitzin Min Hakorot Below min hakorosh nishpor of the Yom Tov. Here is the case of firewood. In your opinion, should firewood be muktzah on Yom Tov? Of course not. You're allowed to have a fire. Yet there is a Mishnah that says as follows. Okay? Here is the mechitza right there. It's made out of wood. All of a sudden on Shabbos, it broke. On Yom Tov. All of a sudden on Yom Tov it broke. Middle of Yom Tov. Now I want to take the wood and do what?
Fire.
Make a firewood. What does the Mishnah say? You're not allowed to. Now, what would Rav Shimon have said about that case? Of course it is. Wood is making itself to be like firewood. Rabbi Yehuda says, no. You want to use firewood? What do you have to do? Prepare the firewood. And the editor of the Mishnah never quoted Rabbi Shimon's opinion. He only quoted, he formulated the halacha reflecting, representing only Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And therefore, let's read it again. Ein mevakin eitzin min hakorot. You cannot splinter wood. Korot are construction beams. Here is what happened. We were building the shul, so Forsberg Lumber came with a delivery of big beams that have been cut to spec for the carpenter, for the construction. And they're sitting, they're laying there on the side, right next to the building. Now I want to do what? What do I want to do? Yeah, I'm missing some wood. I want to use that as firewood. Says the Mishnah, you can't. Why can't you? Because it hasn't been prepared as firewood. What have been set aside for? The construction beams. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what are they? Muktzah. Velo min hakora shenishpara b'yom tov. And not from a beam that broke. The machitza broke on Yom Tov. Sorry, says the Mishnah. Can't use it as firewood. That reflects only the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, we are now going to have a conflicting ruling. On Shabbos, the halach is like the lenient Rabbi Shimon. And on Yom Tov, the halach is like the stringent Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara is going to ask your question. That seems to be a little illogical, that we should be more makil on Shabbos than we are on Yom Tov. So let's read it. Let's read it inside. Michtei, fourth line. Man Stomei L'Masnisen, who is the one who edited the Stam Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Maishna B'Shabbos, the Sosan on to Rabbi Shimon. Or Maishna B'Yantav, the Sosan on to Rabbi Yehuda. Why did he do that? Answer, Amrei. Shabbos B'Chamira Lo Asi L'Zilzule Bey. Sosan on to Rabbi Shimon, the Mekil. Yom Tov to kill the Asir L'Zuzule Bey, Sassamon to Rabbi Yehuda the Machmir. Anybody want to take a stab at it? He says, Shabbos is so full of stringencies. So one day, if I take the liberty of doing what? Of being lenient, all hell is not going to break loose. You're still going to observe Shabbos. So I can afford the luxury every once in a while to be a maker on Shabbos. Because it's so full of stringencies. So once in a while I can be a maker. Correct. On Yom Tov, where there are so many leniencies, particularly with food-related activities, and we're going to see exactly which activities are permissible or not, we're going to see that in Tosfos a little later. So since Yom Tov has the liberties built in, I don't want to go overboard, and from time to time I have to impose a stringency on Yom Tov to remind you, just because it's Yom Tov, it doesn't give you a free license to do everything you darn please. Therefore, says Rav Nachman, I don't mind having the halacha that on Yom Tov, the halach is like Rabbi Yehuda. And I don't mind on Shabbos having the halacha like Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, according to Rav Nachman, he switched the names. Remember that. He switched the names. So now who will be the author in our, who is now saying Beit Shammai, he switched the names by Shabbos. On Yom Tov, who says that you're not allowed to eat the egg? Who says that you're not allowed to eat the egg in our Mishnah? Beit Hillel. Because the halacha is like Beit Hillel against Beit Shammai. And you're not allowed to eat the egg on Yom Tov. Why not? Because on Yom Tov we follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. In the case of the bones, that was the case of Shabbos. So Rav Nachman had to switch it around and make sure that Hillel allowed you to pick up the bones, because on Shabbos we paskin like Rabbi Shimon. So first explanation, in terms of, now we go back. All of this is just to verify the first explanation. Somebody now asks you in Glad Express, why is it that you're not allowed to eat an egg that is laid on Yom Tov? First explanation is because we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov. And that in order to eat anything, you have to prepare it in advance. Since this egg was not in existence on Erev Yom Tov, you could not have prepared it. Therefore, it remains matzah. If somebody will ask you, can you eat an egg that's laid on Shabbos? Up until now, based on information, you tell me you're allowed to eat it. Why? Because on Shabbos we paskin with Rabbi Shimon. The egg is making itself. That's the way Karo codes the law. Karo codes the law that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos and Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov. So when you are from Eidot HaMizrach communities and you follow Maran, and you have a freezer in your basement, on Shabbos you can take anything out of it, no problem whatsoever. On Yom Tov, if you didn't think on Erev Yom Tov that you're going to take something out of that freezer, it remains muktzah, and you're not allowed to eat anything in that freezer on any day of Yom Tov. That's the way Karo ruled. The Ramah, our Ashkenazic Posek, who 99.999% of the time is usually more machmir than Karo, here is one of the few times when the Ramah decides to become a maker. And he passes like Rabbi Shimon, Shabbos and Yom Tov. And I will show you next time, based on a Baal Amor and Daf Yud Zayin, why he came to that conclusion. Why he came to that conclusion. That's not for now. Right now, you know that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov, like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos. Therefore, the Mishnah says, when the kid's going to ask you to learn Mishnayos with you, why does Hillel say, Beitz HaShenol the Yom Tov, Lo Teyachel? Because on Yom Tov, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and the egg is Muktzah. Yeah.
Would say the paragraph of the Mishnah, the difference between Yom Tov and
the pasuk doesn't say anything about Yom Tov.
It's something different. About
yes.
That makes us realize that we can cook. What?
Correct. It's called, the pasuk says, Ach asher yi'ochel l'chol nefesh, hu levado ye'yosel lochem. We're going to study that pasuk. This is Masach Ziyantim. Trust me, we're going to talk about it. It's Shemot, chapter 12, verse 16.
This doesn't make sense.
Why not?
Because it doesn't make sense that you would just try to be more stringent.
Okay. Because don't, I'm going to ask you just test case, okay? I love ice cream. It's Shavuos. You forgot to buy cheese to make cheese blintzes. No cheesecake. Are you allowed to drive to Pathmark to get cheese on Yom Tov? Why not? It's to buy food.
Because it isn't, you can't do it. It doesn't override
every month. Ah, so it doesn't override every din of just because we allow, make accommodations for Yom Tov, doesn't mean everything in the world is permissible. One of the things that is not permissible, even on Yom Tov, is the Isur of Motzah.
But I think what's strange about it is that it's not allowed on Yom Tov.
Right. My point is, that's more strange.
Correct. I understand.
Shabbos is our baseline, what you can't do, and then you're allowed a little leniency on Yom Tov because of that.
I hear the difficulty. What, okay. But let's get a little more into the Masechta. We'll see how we come to the conclusion what's permissible and what's not permissible on Yom Tov. We'll see. Yes.
All right, I'm trying to understand the prior rule. If you had a beam of wood and you
set it aside on Friday, at Erev Yom Tov, rather, no problem.
Could you then chop it up to fit into your Bible?
Of course. Because I looked at Mr. Bean and I said, Abe, I'm cutting you up, Bean. This is it. I'm cutting you up.
Okay.
You are now going to be my firewood. So you're allowed to cut a beam on the other
side. You're allowed to cut.
Because I was making it.
I thought you were allowed to cut.
Who said you know? Where does it say that? Where is cutting an ether? Cutting is if it's still attached to the tree. But if it's already on the ground, you can cut up anything you want. As long as it's not mukta. So if I was making it, it's not. If I wasn't making it, it's not mukhan, and it's mukta.
But, I mean, on Shabbos you can't cut something unless it's
good. Right? On Shabbos, midah oraita. Are you allowed to take a piece of wood that's off the ground and break it? The answer is yes. But it's mukta. There's no milacha in breaking something that is already, that is no longer attached to the ground. The only time that you can't break something off is if it's you're severing it from its source of nourishment. If it's already been severed, there's no issur breaking. No breaking issur on Shabbos. You can break anything you want, according to Torah law. Midrabbanan or something else? Yeah. Yes. This is a style of Rabbi. It's not the only time he did that. That apparently sometimes Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the editor, would communicate his preference by playing that little game. That is correct. Good point. Yes. No. It's an Isur Malacha. It's Isur Mukta. It's not Malacha. In all probability, it's only rabbinic. There are some who believe that it's usur according to Torah law, but it's not malacha. No. There are things which are there are some other parallels to something which is definitely usur according to Torah law, but it's not a malacha. We know that for a fact. It's not a malacha. If you have a donkey, an ox, and you have the plow on its back, and you don't do a thing, you give it a little signal. Let's walk. Hey, have you done any malacha? No.
You mean you can hold a chair in front?
Yeah, or whistle. Do anything. Give an instruction. And he starts walking. That's awesome according to Torah law. But it's not a malacha. It's called mechamer. Achar behemto. That's what the Torah says. Loza asvat mechamer. It's where the animal goes based on your animal, or anybody's animal, is going based on your instruction. You don't touch it. You don't do anything. It's also according to Tola, but it's not a malacha. We have parallels for that. This is explanation number one. We'll continue next week with next three explanations to explain the same machloikis between Shammai and Hillel. Each one touches on a different area. If you want to leave them here, yeah, okay, fine. Leave them here and then I'll put them away.
Save a tree.
Yeah, save a tree, exactly. I'll save a tree. Does she want to take it home? It's okay.